everybody. Welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Theodore Shou, Chief Investment Officer at South Africa-based fund of hedge fund manager Skybound Capital. He spoke with me last week in Hong Kong. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Theodore. Welcome.
Thank you, Nina. Nice to see you again.
So for China-focused hedge funds, for the past 3 months, they have suffered great losses, down almost 10%. But for the year, they're still up over 10%. So how do you rate their performance?
I think it was a little bit difficult for many Chinese managers in the past several months. It was also quite a surprise to asset allocators and investors, because whenever people think about hedge funds, they will assume hedge funds should be able to capture less of the downside of the market, which was mostly the case in the past. But in the most recent month, particularly June and July, many Chinese managers even suffered more losses than the market. Take July, for example. Onshore markets was down about 15%, whereas MSCI China was down close to 10%. Many managers that we track actually went down by more than 20%. So that was really a shock to a lot of SMA
allocators. Why do you think is that?
I think it has a lot to do with how indices are composed. So most of the indices that we track, like either CSI 300 or Hang Seng, those are composed of many stocks and very skewed towards large caps. And if you really look at the market last month and in June, many of the large caps were actually doing all right, particularly after the government intervention, when the government actually injected capital to buy out some shares. Whereas at the same time, a lot of small cap and mid caps suffered much bigger losses, which was not fully captured by the indices, either because they are not a part of the index, or their weights are just too small in the indices to make a difference. And in the past, a lot of hedge fund managers claimed that they generated alpha through the strategies, whatever strategy they play. In fact, from this most recent 2-3 months, what we have seen is a lot of the so-called alpha they generated previously were actually exaggerated beta. So I think a lot of managers actually had more than one beta because their portfolios were tilted towards small and mid-cap in the previous periods, which was more evident in June and July when we see a big loss from the same managers. So it's not because they didn't play their strategy well enough or whether they can still protect your capital on the downside. It's just their exposure to the small mid-caps are too big and they couldn't get out immediately. When there is a boom market, everyone enjoys the liquidity in the market. And when the market starts to tank, liquidity suddenly shrink, and everyone just gets stuck there.
So what does that say about the industry?
I think I particularly value the past quarter. It's a good opportunity for investors to tell the bad from the good. And also, it's a very good opportunity for you to really review whatever manager either you have already have money with or you plan to have money with. So this is a big wake-up call to both the managers who are in the industry. They should be reviewing their own strategies. They should be reviewing how they do business going forward. And also for investors who should be reviewing their existing portfolios.
So for the past quarter, who are the winners and who are the losers?
Okay, this is a very good question because in the past, we usually would regard a manager that returned big numbers as good manager. But from this year's experience, I would say we probably value more the managers who managed to control their risk, who managed to control their volatility in such a market. Therefore, if you ask me about the winners and losers, I will rate those managers who managed to stay in about double digit in terms of absolute return, and also experienced much less volatility than either the market or their peers. as the winners. And for the losers, again, it doesn't necessarily to be a manager that has them badly in terms of return so far. I mean, I can give you an example. There is this particular long-short equity manager who, after July, has already done a year-to-date return of 17%. So obviously, that's not a too disappointing number, right? But if you really look at the track record of that particular fund, it was down 21 in July, and it was down about 20 in June. So they did very well in early month of the year, but then they started to suffer big losses.
So obviously, it's the returns are too volatile, and this you would characterize as the losers, yeah?
Right.
So for the funds who were able to manage less volatile return numbers, what are the strategies they tend to focus on and the sectors?
Yeah, in terms of strategies, I think there are several key approaches that helped some managers to maintain a relatively lower kind of return profile. One is the exposure, the gross exposure and net exposure that you manage across the portfolio. We noticed that across a variety of Chinese managers, the divergence is big in terms of how they manage exposure. Some of the managers are pretty levered, I would say net exposure in excess of 100%. But there are also increasingly more and more managers who are trying to maintain a relatively low net exposure. Say there are equity long-short managers who manage to basically contain their net exposure below 20% all the time. And that type of managers definitely did much better than the high beta and as well as high net managers. So net exposure is one. And then also, if you really look, differentiate between strategies, I would say some of the strategies that make more use of arbitrage opportunities instead of betting on directional opportunities would definitely benefit from this big swings or markets and endure less volatility.
In the current market volatility, how could hedge funds better position themselves?
I think that goes back to how we think about the winners and losers, basically. I think no one can really forecast which direction the market is heading. But one thing is for sure that volatility is at an elevated level, and it is very likely to remain there for an extended period. If that is the case, we would prefer to stay with managers that have relatively low net exposure and who can also deliver true alpha in such a big swinging market. We prefer to stay away from managers who try to either time the market, which is a pretty important point, because a lot of managers are bragging about how they're good at market timing. But in fact, many people got it wrong, and they got it wrong big time. So we actually try to avoid manager who try to time the market, and we avoid the manager who try to make big bets on single names. We in this market environment, we would prefer to have managers who have a rarely diversified portfolio and who can manage their exposure and risk, all the risk parameters on a real-time basis. They're very hands-on. That type of manager will be definitely preferred.
So in terms of investment management, the bigger policy environment, since last time we talked, a year and a half ago, we had the Shanghai Hong Kong Stock Connect
right.
program being launched, and also the mutual market recognition programs, and also the soon-to-be-launched Shenzhen Hong Kong
Connect
Stock Connect program. How do you think those programs impact the hedge fund space?
I would say so far, it has not had a meaningful or material impact on the hedge fund universe as yet. Yes, there are more tools available to the hedge fund managers, but those are not necessarily tools inaccessible in the past. I mean, take the Shanghai Hong Kong Connect, for example. Prior to the launch of that scheme, most of the managers were just making use of QFII and RFQFII quota. And now with the help of Shanghai Hong Kong Connect, yes, they can access the same names or the same stocks they want to trade at a relatively lower cost basis, but that's pretty much it. I don't think it has a material impact as so far as yet. However, in the very long term, all those programs or schemes is signaling the fact that China and the Chinese authority is definitely trying to liberalize the market, trying to open the market further. Think about it. Currently, foreign participation in Chinese capital market is around 2-3%. And with all these schemes and programs, the entire Chinese market will be a lot more accessible to international investors. And even if we just reach 10% from 2-3%, that would mean significant inflow from foreign investors into the Chinese market.
So the stock options, right, which were launched earlier this year, how successful has that market been?
So far, most of the investors who are utilizing that stock options are still more of institutional nature. A lot of asset managers, a lot of big institutions are trying to make use of these options for hedging purpose and et cetera. However, the market is still not deep enough, and there is a natural dilemma. So it is, on one hand, it is the institutional investor who want to make use of it. On the other hand, the market is not deep enough, so you can't really have the liquidity that you wish for to really trade. So again, I think the significance of that program itself is not lying in the short-term trading or the short-term usage of the program itself. It is more the signal that the authority is trying to send to the market that there will be more instruments available to all market participants, and there will be more opportunities for people to leverage on the inefficiency they see the market, which again will benefit and feed the market in from the other side.
So basically, hedge funds are not using.
They're using all the programs that you mentioned. They're using them extensively, but as I said, many of them are using them as a replacement for whatever they were using before, like the QFII and RQFII mm-hmm. quota. So in terms of
the stop options,
For stop options, actually, again, because the market size and the liquidity is still limited,
okay,
it's not going to have a big impact on their existing portfolio. Because think about it, a lot of managers are sitting on billions of US dollars, right?
So now let's move on to the bigger general market, the RMB depreciation, obviously the biggest news of the day. Mm. What do you think the impact will be for the hedge fund industry?
It is quite a surprise to a lot of hedge fund managers, but I think the impact varies from strategy to strategy. Take the equity long-short or equity-centric managers, for example. It does not really have a too meaningful impact in the very short term. Some of the share prices might be impacted a little, but as you rightly pointed out, no one really forecasted it in terms of the timing. And there will be sectors that benefit or benefit more or less from such a move. But for some strategies, take macro or even some CTA managers, for example, from what we gathered, the intelligence that we have, a lot of managers used to bet very heavily on the currency itself, simply because it never moved much, right? So they use...
What do you mean, like they bet on the currency itself?
So, say for example, a lot of people were betting on appreciation of the currency.
How do they do that?
They can do that via CNH. It could be through a futures contract, a forward contract, or options. But simply because the currency didn't move much in the past, a lot of managers were using excessive leverage for that one trade. Because if you don't add on the leverage, it wouldn't be a meaningful trade in the portfolio. That kind of managers, I think, definitely suffered a lot. Some of the managers might think they have their positions hedged because they were probably at the same time shorting some other EM currencies as a hedge. The problem is renminbi or CNH, CNY, moved in such a drastic way within days or hours, which made those other hedges they might put on in the portfolio is less useful or less effective. So that kind of strategies definitely suffered a lot in the short term from that devaluation of the currency. But in the very long term, I would say the move itself was not entirely unanticipated. Many managers have been forecasting a devaluation, not necessarily so soon, but this is a reflection of the macroeconomic conditions that we are seeing in China. It is also what is required for the market to develop more in a more healthy way going forward. As you probably know, China is striving for inclusion in SDR of its own currency. One of the requirements from IMF is basically you need to have a more freely tradable currency or a currency that is more market-driven. Chinese yuan was always claiming to be pegged to a basket of currencies, including dollar, euro, and a few other currencies. But if you really look at the track record and the pricing behavior of Chinese yuan in the past 12, 18 months, it was very much in a straight line. It didn't move much at all. It was not really in line with all the other emerging market currencies or even just all the other currencies. Take the last 12 months, for example, Chinese yuan was the second strongest currency only next to US dollar. But if you think about the monetary policy environment in the US and China, it's such a contrast, right? US Fed is already thinking of hiking rates, whereas the Chinese central bank still continue to cut both interest rates and the required reserve rates. And it's just not justifiable.
So what is your forecast for the RMB's future movement? How much is it going to devalue further?
Well, I believe just simply based on fundamental economics, Chinese currency still has more potential to go down, to depreciate. And for the following 12 months, we will forecast a depreciation in the range of 5 to 10% further.
Now, let's come back to the Asia market. The government has intervened in the market to prop up the market,
right,
and to varying degree of success. So how do you think, you know, it's obviously a choice of no choice, but how do you think the government could have done differently?
First of all, I think the government was very smart. It is currently run by a group of smart people anyway. Whether it could be done differently, I think so. I think yes, but it does make sense for the government to act swiftly in that scenario. That's why I thought they probably rushed a little. However, if they can do it again, I would rather suggest they do not send very clear-cut signals to the market, particularly with regards to the floor, because basically now everyone in the market is assuming there is actually a floor put in place by the government, and it goes against their original wish of deleveraging, right? Because the government was trying to encourage people to take less leverage or even deleverage from their positions, but now that with the government intervention and government capital injecting into the market, basically people or investors can see at which levels are the government forces placing orders, placing buy orders, and they just assume those are the floor or the bottom line of the government. And then guess what? What those investors do is they start to take excessive leverage again, simply because they think there is very limited downside and a limited upside. So I don't think it's good for government to be made use of. I think the government could potentially be smarter in terms of relying more on the market and then intervene in a more flexible way.
Lastly, last time we talked, you said the Chinese hedge funds are going to outperform, and
yeah,
Now it seems to be a terrible time for the industry, but even though if we look at the Greater China hedge funds, they're still pretty, have pretty good performance for the whole year. So do you still hold the same belief?
I do. Just as you mentioned, last time we forecasted Chinese managers to outperform. So if we look at the past 12 months, I would say Chinese managers as a group outperformed their Asian peers by at least 5 to 10 percentage points. And if you compare them to global managers, again, I think Chinese managers as a group outperformed. Going forward, I think the market is still being very vibrant, actually increasingly so. And the managers, as I said, in the past 2-3 months, it was a good opportunity for investors to tell who are the good ones. So the good ones will definitely survive and thrive. A lot of managers have already been either closing or dropping out of the business, but the ones that survived as a group, I do foresee them to continue the outperformance for a while.
Do you also see the Chinese hedge funds becoming, the big ones becoming bigger and then the smaller ones sort of disappear and fail, just like what's happening in the global alternative investment industry?
I think yes and no. Yes, because I believe the big managers are definitely growing bigger, simply because now they have the mass to attract global institutional money. Take some of the largest managers, for example, they might be running an AUM of around 1 to 2 billion a year ago, and now we notice some of them have already doubled or tripled their assets, partially thanks to the market action, partially thanks to the new inflow they attracted. So obviously, for big international institutional investor, the large managers are the best destination. But in terms of the smaller managers, I wouldn't entirely agree that all of them will disappear or all of them will just keep struggling for a long time. In fact, some of the smaller managers are doing all right. That probably contradicts with what I said about the small and mid-cap bias. So what we also see in the market is there are some really talented managers in the small mid-cap space who managed to find the good names to long and the bad names to short, and who also managed to really generate alpha from their strategies. Those managers, they're actually constrained by the capacity of that particular strategy. So they wouldn't grow bigger. They don't need to grow bigger, and their strategy wouldn't allow them to grow bigger. But with the current size they're running, this is probably the sweet spot, and they will stay there. And that type of smaller manager will continue to be an important part of this universe. It's not necessarily for every investor. For the large ticket holders, they are not going to allocate 500 million, a billion to a small cap manager like that.
Oh, okay, great. Theodore, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nina.